The question was asked, being that we have a medrash that says that the world is going to last 6,000 years, and then the seventh millennium is going to be a time of Shabbat, and we know that the world's purpose was to be created for 6,000 years, and towards the end things can get worse. So is there anything being done on a global scale, on a national scale, that the Jewish people repent in preparation of the coming of the Mashiach? So I want to go at that step by step. Daniel, is this pertinent to this, or is it an offshoot?
Is that 7,000 years since Adam or Noah?
Okay, so we'll start with that question. Let's begin with the axiom upon which the question is based, that the world is going to last for 6,000 years. There is one source that says that. There's another source that says 48,000 years. There are other sources that give different numbers. We don't know how long the world is going to last for, and we don't know how to count. Throughout our history, we've had trouble counting. We have a Mishnah that says there are 10 generations from Adam to Noah. You ever count it? Open Devar Hayamim, the first few psukim. Tell me how you end up with 10 generations. And after you've explained to me what a generation means by counting those 10, so then take the next generations from Noah to Avram and see if that definition of generation works. Meaning, from Adam to Shait, is that one generation or two? Is Adam one generation and Shait number two? Well, if it is, then you have 11 generations to Noah. And if you say that the passing of a generation from father to son is one generation, then how do you work out from Noach to Avram? And sit down, take out a Devar Hayamim and see how it works. Mishnah seems pretty simple. 10 generations, right? Should be able to count. In all of our history, we've had trouble with numbers. So the Torah tells us that the Mabul began in the second month. Well, which second month is that? Second month from where? Unclear. When did the Mabul end? Unclear. When did Noach come out of the Teva? Unclear. So that has less relevance. When was the world created? That should be relatively clear, right? We're counting Hey, Tavshin, Samach, Zayin. But it's not so clear because we're counting 5,767 years from creation. Well, which year is number one? And why is this relevant? Because we celebrate certain periods in the celestial cycle. We say there's Birchas Hachama, a blessing we make once every 17 years over the sun, when the sun is in the exact position it was when the world was created. Okay, well, how was the world created? Exactly in which constellation? How do we know exactly when the sun is in that position? So we have a discussion. We have a discussion in Rashi and Tosis and the Gemara, and it seems that the world was created before Adam was created, possibly a half a year beforehand. Or at least our mathematics of figuring out when the constellations began, that goes back, it seems, a half a year before what we would call the beginning of creation. So you see, even the first year is complicated. You continue in history, you come to, God tells Avram, his offspring will be in exile for 400 years. That number doesn't seem to work easily. The Torah says it was 430 years. You continue, when we leave, it says we're going to be in the desert for 40 years. That number doesn't work easily because Moshe was 80 years old when he came before Paro, making him 81 years old when we left Egypt. And he's 120 years when we're in the desert for 40 years. Well, he should be 121, not 120. Moshe tells the Jews in the desert he's going up for 40 days and 40 nights. The Jews don't do their count right. They end up serving the Egel. Each step of the way, you try to analyze the numbers in Tanakh, and it's unclear. We don't know where to begin. We don't know where to end. 70 years in exile. We don't know where they begin. We don't know where they end. We had by Avshalom a number of years since the beginning of the throne. So we say, no, that's a number of years from the time the Jews asked for a king, not even from the beginning of David's kingship. Throughout Tanakh, numbers are complicated. And in Chazal, they're also complicated. So when we say 6,000, we don't know exactly what that 6,000 means. I told you guys, I think, the story that when I was in high school, one of my teachers said that just like we accept an imamin, that we believe in faith that Mashiach is going to come, we believe that it's going to be in 6,000 years. So I said that I don't understand how he could say that's part of the principle. It doesn't say it is part of the principle. So he said, no, it's a Tana de Eliyahu, and if Eliyahu said it, it must be true. So I said, yeah, but certain things Eliyahu said, we don't go in halacha like him. So not everything Eliyahu said do we accept as prophecy. Whatever's quoted in the Gemara is Eliyahu saying. It's an opinion. It's a Tanakh opinion. It doesn't we don't give more validity than other Tanakh opinions. So our sages teach us Tipach Hatzmosen, that anyone who tries to figure out when Mashiach is going to come, our sages curse him, his bones should shatter, his bones should burst. We don't know when Mashiach is going to come. Now, we have on tradition that there are two options for how Mashiach is going to come. Either Be'ito or Achishena. There's a set time when God says the world won't pass that time. Or else, if we merit, Achishena, God will make it come sooner. So some want to say, yeah, we can't figure out when Mashiach is going to come. That's Be'ita, but that's Achishena. But Be'ita, it's set time. So we know 6,000 years. But we don't know. We have other opinions in the Medrash. So firstly, we can't take that as an axiom, that the world is only going to be around 6,000 years. We don't know. We don't know if the 6,000 is the accepted opinion. And we don't know how to count the 6,000. Both things. The next step, as far as preparation for Mashiach, so the Rebbe from Chabad tried that. Different years, he said, we're going to focus on different mitzvot, and that was in an effort to arouse awareness within the Jewish people. Mashiach is a real concept, it is going to come, and we do have to prepare. So each year we'll try to focus on a different mitzvah. One year it was the mitzvah things and the tefillin. Each year had its mitzvah. In general, why not? It's good to try and strengthen mitzvot. We don't know when Mashiach is going to come. We don't know. Most of the times that people thought Mashiach was going to come, it caused problems. It caused people to sell their homes inappropriately. It caused people to give up their livelihood and destroy their homes. It caused people to go to other religions. It brought about problems. And whenever things get tough, the people have a tendency to say, can't get worse than this, Mashiach's got to come now. When the Gulf War broke out, people said, it can't get worse than this, Mashiach's got to come now. When George Bush was attacking Afghanistan, they said, it can't get worse than this, Mashiach's got to come now. When the Intifada began, they said the same thing. Throughout our history, people have been saying that. So after the destruction of the Second Temple, the feelings were ripe for a false Messiah to come. And so there were many. There wasn't only one. There were many. After the Inquisition, the same thing was true. During time Shabtai Tzvi, same thing, and Shabtai Tzvi wasn't the only one. I have a book at home that's just about the false messiahs in Jewish history. It's a long book. There's a long list. We know of the famous ones, but there were many, many, many false messiahs throughout our history. So, on the one hand, the concept is a true concept. It's one of the tenets of the faith. On the other hand, the attitude that Mashiach is soon coming, as much as you're saying maybe our preparation for it is a positive thing, it's also a dangerous thing. We have to be careful when we start speaking about Mashiach as being imminent. On the other hand, if people really thought that Mashiach might be coming any day now, then maybe they'd behave differently. So Chazal didn't put it that way. Chazal said a person's attitude in life has to be, I have no guarantee I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning. So, shuv yom echad lifnei mitatcha, Chazal said. Always do tshuva one day before you're going to die. We have a halacha, if a person says, I will be a nazir a month in my lifetime. Before I die, I'll be a nazir a month. So the halacha is, you make him be a nazir now. Who told you you're going to live more than a month? So you have to do it now. So our attitude in halacha is that if our approach has to be, we don't know whether or not we're going to live beyond tomorrow. And that's what's supposed to drive us to do tshuva. Whether Mashiach is going to come or not, we don't know. In general, our approach should be to try and help everyone perform mitzvot. We're supposed to care for one another. And the greatest care we could give someone else is to help them lead a good life. So without the call of Mashiach, we still have to try and get everyone to perform mitzvot. And the best way to do that is to be exemplary in our behavior. People see us and see that when we perform mitzvot, we're good people, we're kind people, we're caring people, we're intelligent people. So people look at us and say, I want to be like that, I want my children to be like that. And then there are avenues of making it available. It hurts me, I don't know what to do about it, but I keep hearing stories here in the Machon about people who grew up in a religious home, but their parents couldn't afford to send them to a religious day school, so they sent them to public school, and then they knew nothing, so they didn't keep any mitzvos. And then, when they're 25 or 35 or 45, they come and they learn about Judaism. And I think that we have to do something about that. Birthright is very good, and maybe we have to think about creating something like that to help people who can't afford it. They should also get a Jewish education. It's terrible that we see the product. I mean, there are people who aren't going to Jewish day schools because they can't afford it. So we, on the one hand, have to be exemplary in our own behavior. We also have to think how to help other people attain the education that they need in order to be good Jews. The Gemara says, "Gdolim ma'asechiyah." Rebbe had a disciple named Rabbi Chiya. And Rabbi Chiya saw that the Torah was being forgotten. So Rabbi Chiya went out, even though he was a great sage, and he himself, he planted the pishtun, the flax. He grew the flax. He made nets out of the flax. He caught the wild animals. He shechted them. He gave their meat to aniyim. He took their hides, wrote Sifrei Torah on it, and took five children and taught them Torah and asked each one to teach the other one. And then he taught Mishnah to six children. Each one was taught one tractate, one Seder, one order of Mishnah, and they all taught one another. And that's how Rabbi Chiya caused the Torah not to be forgotten from the Jewish people. Meaning in Rabbi Chiya's time, there was a danger that the Torah could have been forgotten. But Rabbi Chiya said, okay, I have to build Jeps, I have to build Eisha Torahs, or whatever it is, in his time, in NCSY, that'll get people to keep Torah. He did it in the purest fashion, but he also saw the need for it. So today we also have a need for such a thing, and we have to think how to apply it practically. So on the one hand, we have to live our lives in a way that attracts people to Torah, and on the other hand, we have to think how to do positive, active outreach. I don't think it's our job when we just begin, but eventually it is our job. I think every person has to invite people for a Shabbos meal, and if you don't have neighbors who are distant from Judaism, you live in a totally religious neighborhood, so you can invite people for a Hanukkah meal. If you celebrate Yom HaTzmut, invite them for a Yom HaTzmaut meal. Make it something that has to do with Emunah, with the fact that Hashem cares for the Jewish people. There's Hashgacha Pratit. There are ways, and it's our responsibility to bring people close. In the yeshiva in Ramat Gan, whenever they take a taxi, so the students know that it's their job to strike up a conversation with the taxi driver, to talk to him and bring him to a discussion. You have today, the Haredi world has Yad La'achim, and they have their organizations that go door to door. The Dati Lumi has Panim El Panim, right? If they go knock on people's doors, people are interested if we take the time to talk to them. I don't think it's our job now. People who are at the Machon have to focus on learning, but after a person knows enough, that's part of what a person has to do. A person might build a website and make classes available. There are many ways to do it. If a person's not as talented in talking to people directly, so there are other ways of doing it. But we have to do both. We have to both lead our lives in a way that's attractive, that people will want to lead this kind of life, and also and be proactive, figure out ways to do it. People hear of the Chazanish that he learned. It's true, the Chazanish learned a lot. But Chazanish also had kids that he himself brought to his home, that he was Makari, that were at his Shabbos table. And he did proactive kirov also, directly.